This is the Illuminate Podcast, a Sandy Boy production. Each week on the Illuminate Podcast, the hosts will bring you insightful conversations and stories of people who are illuminating their own lives through their business, work, community, family, and world.
Hello, and welcome to the Illuminate Podcast. I'm your host, Emmy Birch, and today we are talking to my friends Sid and Roberta, who are the founding members of a really awesome rock band based out of New York. They're called The Record Players NYC. They specialize in music from the beginning of rock and roll all the way through psychedelia and everything in between. In this conversation, we talk about how they both got into music and how their band got started, and spoiler, they just started learning the instruments. I mean, talk about inspiration, but don't listen to me. You've got to hear their stories. We talk about how they got started, where the band came from. They gave us some ideas for marketing tips. We talk about songwriting. We apply it to all sorts of things. And really, it's just awesome to illuminate the story of their band and what they're doing. I hope it inspires you to just say yes and to do something awesome. We're so glad that you're listening to the Illuminate Podcast. Make sure to like and review us so we can get more listeners on the show. And if you have ideas for people or folks who should be illuminated, you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. The Illuminate Pod is all you need to know. All right, thank you so much for listening. Without further ado, my friends, Roberta and Sid from The Record Players NYC. All right, today on the podcast, we are talking to not one, but two of my awesome rock and roll musical friends from the Record Players NYC, Sid and Roberta. Hello, friends.
Hello,
hi,
Emily.
How are you?
Nice to see you.
I'm so happy that we were having this conversation, and y'all look snazzy. What's the getup? Is this your normal attire for a concert?
Pretty much, yes. Depends on the day, I guess.
Yeah.
And all right, so we got some sparkles and some animal print and some sunglasses. Very important. Yeah. Very, very important.
These are actually, I'd like to brag, I found a place in London that actually made authentic reproductions of the glasses that Roger McGuinn made famous in the mid-1960s.
What?
So, yes. So I got four pair of them.
Oh, that's so cool.
I'm set.
Yeah. You're set for a while. Oh my goodness, that is amazing. Well, on y'all's YouTube channel, The Record Players NYC, you say that you play music from the dawn of rock and roll to the beginnings of psychedelia. So before we dive into what you consider the beginning of rock and roll, how did you get into music in the first place?
Well, I guess I could start first is that starting with this part of the journey of the band is that for a birthday present for myself on a milestone birthday, I decided that since I always wanted to play guitar, I got myself a lesson at a local place called the New York City Guitar School, and never picked up a guitar in my life, and bought a lesson, rented a guitar, and loved it. And so from there, rented a guitar from them, an acoustic guitar, and they had a whole curriculum, and it's geared toward adults. So you're not doing Mary Had a Little Lamb or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and you're doing actual rock songs. And for a year later, they had other electives, and one was called Rock Band 101, and they throw you together with other people, and the recital is they rent out a New York City club, and you are on stage with your teacher, and you have songs that you do a whole recital of rock songs with drums and bass and electric guitar at that point. And you get on stage in front of an audience of people supporting you, and I was hooked. And from there, that's when Sid comes in, and he decided he wanted to continue from there too.
Well, you know, you asked, I think your question was how you got into music, and music's always been playing in my head. I always listen to music, you know, from the time I can remember. I'm fortunate in the sense to have had an older stepbrother. So he was of the perfect age. He had all the British Invasion records, and he had all the latest records, and he would play them all the time. And I took piano lessons as a kid. And unfortunately, I just wasn't as dedicated to it as I perhaps should have been. But I had friends who were in bands, and I would always go and listen to them and support them. Always was an avid consumer of music. I grew up in Toronto, Canada, which had a thriving music scene when I was growing up. And I also, went to the big arena shows. Always liked music, but always thought, oh, I can't do this, And Roberta actually did persuade me. I've always been fascinated by the bass guitar. I don't know why. I didn't know why. Now, if you ask me why, I could tell you. And that is because when the bass stops playing, everything stops. And that's not an original thought. I got that from actually a bass player who has his own podcast. So Roberta persuaded me to pick up the bass guitar, and I really had an affinity for it, and I really enjoy it. It's at the point where it's like, yeah, I really should learn guitar, but I really haven't, because I really like playing bass. Because it's, someone in any music store once said to me, you can always, it's hard to find a place in a band as a guitar player or a keyboard player, but everyone's looking for a bass player. So I thought, well, okay, that's as good a reason as any. But I really enjoy it. I'm, as much as I like to think of myself as a melody guy, I'm holding down the rhythm.
So did you go to the same school that Roberta went to learn bass?
Yes, she turned me on to that. And then I also did the rock band, the performance class is what it is. And fortunately, I was in a band with a bunch of people who liked the music I did. And we ended up recruiting someone from New York City Guitar School to be our first lead guitar player. So I often talk about this, but if you do look up the Record Players NYC, you might actually find an old clip of us with our first guitar player, and our teacher was playing drums because we couldn't find a drummer.
Wow. So I love this story already for so many reasons, because first of all, you are never, it's never a bad time to learn a new instrument or try something new. You both just decided at a milestone birthday, Roberta, to pick up a guitar. And you somehow, it's so cool, that in and of itself. But then also the fact that you transitioned from just music consumers to music performers, you're putting the music out there. So when did the band happen? You mentioned that you got one of your early friends and your teacher to be a part of the band, but when did that become a thing?
It became a thing, I guess, when after that first recital, so to speak, that we did, and then the bug hit, and then Sid did his recital, so to speak.
It was a recital.
And then we decided at that point and had a long discussion.
Very long. We stayed up half the night, I think.
And said, do we want to do this together?
Right.
And then from there, it's like, okay. And then from there, we discussed, what did we want to do? What type of music? What type of thing that we wanted to do, where and how? And then from there, it was going from that to recruiting people. And then our backgrounds are with branding and marketing, we had to figure out what is it that we wanted to really have our niche and make us special and be out there, because we had been, as you said, consumers of other bands and going out and seeing other friends play. So we wanted to be special and different. And so that's when we came up with the Record Players NYC and that one little part of that type of music genre.
The tagline came from just something that we sat and that long, long conversation. We've been married a long time and we have a great rapport, a great relationship. And we wanted to know if going into what was basically would be a commercial enterprise would test the relationship. And that was part of it. I also, we also basically shared a lot of tastes. We both introduced one another to music that we like. Although Roberta still doesn't get that progressive rock of the 1970s thing that I adored so much when I was growing up. But nonetheless, we still liked a lot of the same things. And it started to coalesce into, here's a theme that earlier you asked us, what does it mean from the dawn of rock and roll to the beginnings of psychedelia and almost everything in between? I say beginning of rock and roll, Heartbreak Hotel. So I say roughly 1954 to 66. And our drummer likes to tease me a lot because I like to say psychedelia began on August 5th, 1966, which is the day the Beatles released Revolver. So, But in that, for us, there's, for me, the sweet spot is the British Invasion, 64 to 66. But I also like the blues revival and the early garage bands that many people have yet to hear of from the early to mid 60s before the British Invasion. So there are so many things there. And as we start to transition from a cover band that's really digging for nuggets as well, some of the things people know, to one, to writing our own material that reflects our influences, that is something that we hold very close, because to me, that's where it all began. You know, no matter where you go, it all goes back to Jerry Lee, and it all goes back to Little Richard, and it all goes back to Chuck Berry. Before that, it goes back to the blues greats who gave everybody everything, including the 12-bar blues, which is such a cornerstone of modern music.
This is such a good crash course for anyone who doesn't know the beginnings of rock and roll. And I always like to ask that question to someone who's a rock and roll fan, because there is no specific start date of, you know, rock and roll was established at this date. And you can argue, I always say it's somewhere like 1955-ish. That's my answer in class when I'm teaching rock and roll history. But I love how you've covered all of those people that laid the roots. So tell us a little bit, answer some more of those questions. When you're picking the songs that you like to cover, what are you looking for in a song? And I'm asking this specifically on kind of a spin of my students who are trying to get into rock and roll music as covering it themselves, but also my students who are starting to write their own blues songs and rock and roll songs and songwriting in general. What are some of the things you're looking for that makes a hit?
Well, for me, when we're looking to pick songs, I'll go along lines of with cover songs. With part of what the Record Players NYC is, we've determined that what we wanted to do too is to be what I call like a dance band, and that I love it when I'm on the stage and I see my audience moving and up and dancing and having a good time. So part of that is when I'm looking at the different songs that are out there, especially when I'm fronting the band and singing, is I want to be able to also move and dance as well on stage, even when I'm playing my guitar or playing my harmonica, is that I want to see those types of songs that have the good rhythm that are out there, the types of songs that have a good melody that the people and the audience can sing along to, a good chorus. And then finally, it's the type of songs that are not necessarily the ones that everyone knows. We always are looking for the more obscure or maybe not as familiar. They might know, for example, a song that, for example, the Kinks did. They might know the Kinks, but they may not know a specific song of the Kinks. So we'll look for that B-side, for example.
Yeah. And so before Sid answers, we have to go backwards. Roberta, you play guitar, you play harmonica, and you sing. Did you do all of those things before you took this one lesson at that one monumental birthday?
Absolutely not.
You've learned all of this.
Yes. Yes. And the harmonica actually is a newer thing that I've been doing the last few months. And that was through a friend of mine, through just going and watching him play. And he plays harmonica in a band, a blues band. And we were talking and he was like, hey, I'll help teach you. And I said, absolutely, I would love it. So I've been taking lessons from him, and it's just been a wonderful instrument. And as a rhythm guitarist, which is what I am, I have more of an affinity now taking harmonica lessons because I have that rhythm guitar basis.
And so it's all growing off of each other. I still can't get over that you were learning all this and you guys have formed a band and you have catchphrases and you're putting on your marketing things. We're going to come back to that marketing thing. Sid, okay. What are you looking for when you're picking music?
Oh, you know, I think I was thinking about this and you know, I was trying to think, what makes a good song? And I think there's two definitions. Dick Clark, the great American DJ, American Bandstands, many members of your audience may know who he is, defined a good song as if it's got a good beat and you can dance to it. That's pretty good. I like that. The great Duke Ellington, one of the great American composers of all time, said, if it sounds good, it is good. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty good too. So, you know, I certainly a good melody. I'm always looking for, you know, good words, something that tells a story. That's something that Chuck Berry has imparted to his millions of acolytes. Some of my favorite songwriters, you know, pop songwriters of all time are ones who tell a great story. You know, I think of Lawrence Hart, Stephen Sondheim, of course, and John Lennon. Ron Mail of Sparks, Randy Newman, Paul Simon, their songs say something. I mean, yes, there's great room for "I love you, baby. If you leave me, I'm going to die." You know, that's fine. And that it works. And, you know, Paul McCartney wrote some of the greatest songs of all time for, you know, for his wife, Linda, and his girlfriend, Jane Asher. And they stand the test of time. But as I start to evolve as a songwriter, I like to tell stories. I like to, you know, little playlets, if you were, which is what Lieber and Stoller like to call their songs. So, and you could say the same about Sondheim. So I think of all of these things, and you know, my musical vocabulary right now is rather limited, but I'm looking to expand my palette. But I know the basics. And if I think you can attach something that tells a good story to a good rhythm and a good melody, you have something. And I'll just add one more thing. Doing the songs that we do, we're playing to audiences whose grandparents maybe even, if they're young grandparents, are listening to these songs, and they come away hearing songs that they may not have heard, and they walk away saying, "That was really good. Who did that?" You know,
and to add to that is we also will do songs that maybe they have heard other bands do or have re-recorded, or they've heard it in a television commercial now, or a movie or a product placement now. And so, and they'll come up afterwards and say, "Oh, I just heard," for example, they'll say, "Oh, Tom Petty did that song," and it's really not Tom Petty's original song, for example, and it was from someone else before that. So it's just a very interesting thing to see that happen.
It's like you're also educating the audience. You're helping to spread the word of this, of these many generations of great music. So it keeps going. I want to come back to the whole songwriting thing in a second, but I really want to tap into this whole, in your prior life, you were both marketing people.
I was in public relations and event marketing and such, and then changed careers after COVID and reinvented myself. And I'm now in a different industry altogether, and just things change. And but yet music always is a constant in my life.
Yeah.
And so do you have background in this too?
Well, yeah, I was a public relations guy. I changed jobs a few times. I actually have a bit of an acting background too. And you know, I wanted
to be an actor. Not scared of the stage. You got the stage on lockdown.
Well, you know, it depends who's in the audience. So, you know, I wanted to be an actor and a playwright. And then ended up doing public relations, marketing, and branding. And, you know, I also have a graduate degree in journalism. So I've done writing on this. I've also always written. So, you know, in a sense, doing the music, doing the artistic side that I've always yearned to do, and marrying that with the business and commercial know-how that we both possess, I think has given us an advantage. You know, we know so many people who are so phenomenally talented. And I could say this when I was pursuing theater, and they just don't know what to do with it. You can have all the talent in the world, but if nobody knows who you are and nobody knows what you can do, then you're not really progressing and you're not going to make it.
What are some of your tips for someone who's listening that is like, I know I have quite a few students who are exceptionally talented, either as songwriters or as singers. What are those things that you put into place for the Record Players NYC? What are some of the ideas that we could glean off of what you did successfully?
Are you asking ideas for songs or ideas for just marketing the band?
Let's just talk the marketing thing. Okay. We're going to come back and we're going to dive deep into what songs you're writing here in a second.
Okay. Do you want to take this one? All right. I think it's a lot of basic stuff. I think bands aren't Mount Everest. If you know, it's just the people aren't going to climb you because you're there. You know, you really have to get out there. And I think a lot of it is, and it's a lot easier, I think, now in this age than it was when, you know, we first started in the public relations industry, because there was no internet. Yes, kids, there was such a thing as a life without an internet. And, you know, you have these tools by which you can push out your band. You know, people can go to our YouTube channel, see what we do. They can keep up with us on Facebook and formerly on Twitter. There was a time when I would do shows and Roberta and I would sit there and label and stamp postcards of everybody in my address book and just mail it out and hope a few of them would come. Yes, it's true.
The olden days.
But, you know, now you can track who's coming, why they're coming, how often they're visiting your page, who you can target for your marketing. Yes. And also push out, and you can choose who wants to get your stuff and who doesn't. Yes. I mean, this is all elementary stuff, but I think there's a lot of things that people can do. You know, once you have the talent, you have to let people know what that talent is. And the other element of this is also the networking. Just like any other job that you have, your students are going to go out and look for careers in the music industry. They've got to network like crazy and get to know bookers and producers and whomever, agents and managers and whomever else. And that's basically also part. There's a human element of getting to know people who can help you get to where you need to go.
And I would also add to that is your reputation. And that I would say that to get out there and what I call show face, and that it's very old fashioned in a way, but if you can just get out there, and even if it's you're not performing that night, or if, you know, just go out there and just be out there. When we go into see other friends play, or just because we want to, you know, obviously because we love their work, we'll walk in a room and people go, oh, the record players are here, you know, and it's just reputation and what precedes you. And the other part of that is of the reputation of, you know, that you are who you are, your brand, but also it's being your brand, but also is to be nice and be out there and help others. And that's part of it, is that will get you a long way too, because people remember that. And we always remember when we first started, is that one of our very first times on stage, and we had a technical glitch happen on stage, and a more established band, one of the members came up and helped Sid with his amp. And they're on a major record label now. And when we see them, we always remember and tell them, and they're so humble still. And they are just the nicest people, and they don't remember it, but we do.
Yeah.
And so it's always what I call paying it forward. You know, you just always remember that, and it will get you far.
That's such a good reminder that you don't, like, they don't remember helping you with your amp. It was such a small thing for them, but it meant so much to you. That's such good content that you are sharing, so we can all work on our marketing prowess. Now, 180. Sid, what songs are you currently writing? What is your, what are you working on, composer?
actually, I've wrote a song that I really am very, very proud of. I just need a couple of tweaks in the bridge, I think, and I really think it could be something. And it's just basically the song is called Karishma Vaswani. It was about a BBC broadcaster. It's not a stalking song, but I just had a melody in my head, and I just really couldn't figure it out. I sat down on the bass and picked it out, and then I came up with a couple of choruses about a guy who every night has to sit down and watch this woman broadcast the news from Singapore on the BBC, you know. And that inspiration just came because I thought it was just really funny. Now, there are always inspirations. Joey Ramone did a song called Maria Bartiromo because he used to watch her all the time giving the reports from CNBC, and that's where you get your inspiration. So that's something I've finished. One song that I've done that, again, I have to tweak a little bit, is just based on an idea. One day, you know, Roberta mentioned casually she had a friend who lived in suburban New Jersey whose mother would spend her summer sitting by the pool. And immediately I had this idea, like something out of a John Cheever novel,
like a song
about a woman who just, a bored suburban housewife sitting there tanning her skin to crisp. And then I turned it into a country rock kind of song about Lydia's mother. She sits by the pool tanning her life away. New Jersey summers are always so warm and so long, and tomorrow's another hot day. And then it goes into the story about how she longs for days where she was once young, and, you know, and the children have grown and gone away, and she's an alien. It's a John Cheever novel, you know. And I wrote another song about, you know, which I called Ken Kesey meets O. Henry by way of Chuck Berry, which is like a little twist in the end about a guy who is, you know, when you find it at the end that he's actually institutionalized and complaining about life. So these things come from anywhere and everywhere. You just have little ideas. And I would tell anybody who wants to write songs, carry on a notebook. It sounds corny. Write down an idea, you know?
Okay. I have to go back to these three songs, my friend.
Okay.
One of them you said had a country western flair.
Yes.
What was the one you just finished? What's the flair of that one? And then
it's,
I got to know
hard,
about
it. It's just a hard straight ahead rock and roll. Basic.
Okay. So
two-four. It's very quick. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And what about this one who ends up institutionalized?
That's interesting you say that. Because I'm a beginner, I'm always concerned that everything I'm writing is basically a copy of everything else. So some of your audience members are probably Ed Sheeran fans. So they are probably, they've been very closely following his recent acquittal in a civil trial on plagiarism. Keith Richards basically says everything he did is a copy of Chuck Berry, and he says it now to this day. So the song that I wrote about institutionalization starts out with three rhyming couplets, which is basically Chuck Berry's Around and Around, and then it segues into something else. So we all start from somewhere. We all copy from something, and it's what we do with it that really makes the song unique and different.
Oh, that's such a good line right there. Because we do. We all start from somewhere. Mm-hmm. We all copy something. It's what we do with it that makes the difference. So what are your next goals? Like, tell us a little bit about where the band has come and what your next goals are moving forward.
Interesting you say that. Yeah. Well, where we've come and where we're going. We have been performing around New York City and Long Island area live. And we've done some benefits along the way. And that was lovely to do, both indoors and outdoors. Yeah. And that was an interesting experience, too. And that is something to remember, too, for your audience, too, when you perform outdoors versus indoors. And those are different components as well. So always remember to make sure you have the right gear with you as well. And know about that with sound and timing and how things are different with that. Different elements out there.
Monitors help when you're out.
And also for and women as well, if you're wearing outfits to make sure about outdoor activities as well,
that you dresses have outfits in the to wind.
So you have to make sure about your wardrobe, and that also is a component. And these are little things that you have to worry about details. So that's one thing to impart too, is make sure about details. And then the other is where we're going is that now that I'm doing harmonica, it's opened up a whole new world. So with that, with a lot of the rock and roll bands of our time period that we are doing, we are now looking at different things that those bands are looking at what they did and their roots. And a lot of their roots go back to the American blues. And so that's what we're exploring now, and looking to see how we can go back and see the Little Walters and the Harpo Slims of the world and the Memphis Minis, and just look at what their works are and how can we incorporate that into what we're doing and just taking it to a whole nother world. So, and a challenge for me. So
you just added one instrument and you opened up a whole nother genre of possibilities. And again, I love that your thought process is how can we get these sounds that people might not be hearing all the time out to our audiences?
Exactly. And really just the fact that our last gig that we did, and we did a whole mashup with the Yardbirds and with Vince, Vince Taylor. It was
Johnny Burnett.
With the rockabilly.
Yeah.
And we did that and did a whole mashup of Train Kept a Rolling. And so we did a whole mashup with the two different sounds of that same song and put that together. And it was just a really fun way of doing it for everyone to see.
That's awesome. Okay. So Sid.
Yes.
When we met, we just gabbed about favorite songs, favorite artists. And this is your floor. Okay. What are some of the artists, some of the songs, some of the people that we need to be listening to right now that you don't think are getting enough listens?
Oh, okay. Well, okay. you can never listen to the Beatles enough, as far as I'm concerned. I would say what I've started to listen to recently, and we talked about this when we met, is try to find, I've become a fan of you know, the Northern sound, Birmingham, Manchester, the British Invasion, the Hollies are from Manchester, the Move is from Birmingham, the Animals, of course, are from Manchester, and then there's a couple of bands from Newcastle, the Nice, but they're more of a prog rock band that became Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So, you know, there are a couple of things. I would say essential listening is a band from Seattle called the Sonics. They were really the first proto-punk garage band, and they didn't get their due because, again, they had distribution problems, and it's one of those things. I've recently discovered a compilation called Girls in the Garage. These are all early to mid 60s, like 8 CDs of them from between 63 and 67. These female fronted bands. That's what I think, you know, I'm really very interested. I would always tell people just to listen to the blues, to listen to Muddy Waters, to listen to Howlin' Wolf, all those Chess records. And of course what I call, you know, there's the great four. There's Little Richard, there's Chuck Berry, there's Elvis Presley, of course, and Jerry Lee Lewis. And I would add to that pantheon Fats Domino and Bo Diddley. Those are the essentials as far as I'm concerned.
I love it. Those definitely are the essentials. I'm so excited that we get to share in this experience of your band growing and you guys doing awesome things. I didn't tell the listeners how we met. And I wasn't sure if I was going to tell them, but I think because it's been such an easy conversation, y'all, we met on an airplane.
Yes.
We just happened to be across the aisle neighbors, and we got talking about rock and roll right after the London Marathon. And I'm so glad that we were put next to each other, because this is so cool. I really hope that when your band goes on tour, we can find a way to get them down into Savannah.
Absolutely.
Well, we're certainly very interested in doing that. To me, a tour is basically Boston at this point, you know, or Philadelphia. But,
well,
you know,
come on down.
Get to the point. Yeah, if we get to the point, we could, you know, go and tour other regions of the country is something very appealing and very interesting.
That'd be so much fun. All right. Before we hit our end of show questions, is there anything else we need to talk about? I mean, we've covered a lot of bases here.
That's a good one. Well, I'd also add to your audience to listen to Beethoven at every opportunity. So that's you know, to me.
Okay.
You're talking about essentials. Ludwig van is the essential.
Okay.
As far as
I'm glad we added a little classical pop in there.
And I would say that to your audience, to stay curious.
Yes.
Ask questions, and always, if you are at a concert or. If you have an opportunity, go up to the band members afterwards, not only just say, hey, you're great, because that's one thing, but ask them a question about their instrument, or go ask them about those types of things. Why did you choose that particular song, or why did you want to go and put that particular solo in right at that moment? Because the performer will probably be very happy to talk to you afterwards, not right when they're trying to break down their instrument, right at that moment, but because you're trying to get off the stage,
or on
the stage, right? Don't go right before they're about to go on, because they're in their mindset and trying to get ready, but they would probably really, really appreciate it. And if you buy them a soda or something, they would probably like that too. And
well, in many cases, a soda isn't sufficient,
It would just be, I think that they would really appreciate it if you talk about the actual work that they've put into it, because they would appreciate the fact that you were then listening and being an active listener at their performance. And I think that they would appreciate that very much.
Good feedback.
Actually, Emily, I will go back to something you said. I would say, as someone who's just beginning to learn how to write songs, and I'm basically self-taught, you know, just like anything else, write about anything. Grab an idea. I have a song that I'm working on now that just spawned. I came up with a rhyming couplet that I thought was just very good, and I like it so much, I'm writing a song around it. So, you know, just because it's, you know, many writers, and I'm no different, fall in love sometimes with their own prose. And it's like, oh, I got to keep this turn of phrase. I've got to keep the sense. And it just is so well, it doesn't fit. So luckily I have the liberty now to be able to write around something that I wrote without an editor to tell me that it doesn't fit. So I would just say that's inspiration comes from anywhere. And I will add this also. We had the good fortune to see David Crosby solo about 10, 12 years ago. And he said something on stage that I suppose many musicians do. He says he keeps a guitar on a stand by his bed. He said, and I quote, "You never know when inspiration is going to strike." And both of us have experienced getting up in the middle of the night because we have an idea, and grabbing a pad and writing something out. Or in Roberta's case, she had run to her phone and dictated some lyrics into a phone, which is something new. Because I will tell anybody, many of viewers probably know this, but if you think I have a great idea, I'll get to it in the morning. No, you won't. You'll forget.
It's gone.
Always have that ready. And I was just about to say that exact same thing. to just make sure I will go in the other room and I've sung into yes. my voice recorder and then have those lyrics, do that and then go back to bed. And then in the morning, I'll listen to what it was. Sometimes it's good, sometimes not so good, but you know, I would forget it the next morning. So it's just good to have it and do that right when that creativity strikes. It's usually about like 3:35 in the morning.
And 3:35.
You know, about 3:35 in the morning. And that's how the Record Players NYC, also the name came about, was about that time in the morning. All of a sudden, wow. I woke up out of a sound sleep, and I'm a Record Players NYC, mm-hmm. and ran, wrote that down because I had a pad of paper right on the nightstand, and wrote that
down. That's so cool. Okay, this has been so fun. I'm so glad we got a chance to have this conversation, and I'm really pumped that you get to come into class on Thursday and do a Zoom with the class, but we have to do our end of show questions.
Okay.
Are you reading any good books right now? Are there any good books that you want to recommend to the listener?
Good question. The answer is, I wish I could say yes. I would say, and this is sort of an inspiration question, my two favorite poets are Wordsworth and Coleridge. Very, you know, you could say they're very easy choices, but the way that they can, each of them in his own right, convey a sense of time and place and feeling. Who wrote a poem about a few lines composed above Tintern Alley? Or who could write a poem about being stuck in his grove because he spilled scalding water on his foot? And yet you feel you're there, and the language and the evocation of the sense and what he is and his isolation is unlike anything, and that's something to aspire to. So I draw inspiration from Victorian poetry in many cases. I also was thinking, I had, when I was in journalism school, I had a professor who was from New Jersey, and his hero was Bruce Springsteen. You got to meet Bruce Springsteen. You talked to him about what his influences were. As we all know, Bruce Springsteen started out being the great urban poet from New Jersey, talking about alienated blue-collar kids who were whiling away their time in the streets of New Jersey. And then once he felt he exhausted that, looked for inspiration and found it in the works of Walker Evans. So I'm looking for inspiration in the works of John Cheever, as I mentioned earlier, because I'm very interested in exploring the alienation of suburban life and the boredom and what that does. Frank Zappa wrote about that in many of his early albums, too, because he grew up in Lancaster, California. So, you know, those are some of the books and some of the things that I would look to for inspiration. And sometimes I refer to just on a whim when I feel like it.
Your depth of knowledge is amazing, as you are just rattling off names and quotes. And it's just so fun to see your obvious passion for journalism coming over into your, what started as a hobby listener, becoming something that you get to create now. It's just so cool to hear. I'm so happy to know you guys.
Oh, thank you, Emily. I feel the same way about you.
Yeah. This is so cool. Okay. Is there anything that really matters you want them to hear before we sign off?
One of the last thing is to tell people, say yes. Mm. If someone comes up to you, I'm quoting what John Lennon said when he went to up the ladder at the exhibition of Yoko Ono, but it's true. Say yes. Mm-hmm. If you see something, be positive and say yes, because you never know where it will take you. We said yes to you, and
that's right.
Look at what we're doing now. So this is great.
So glad you did. Oh, this has been so good. What do you want to add, Sid?
Oh, well, I'll just add one thing, that when we were another passion of mine is Eastern European Balkan brass music, which is mad. It's for 12, 14 piece horns. And we got introduced to us by, you know, a gentleman we know who's a professional jazz musician. And he ultimately became a rabbi, but he still pursued music as to make a living. And so we'd go to his concerts he'd put together, and there's someone we knew who encouraged us to pursue music. This has to be about 10 years ago. And I said, well, it's too late for me. And he says, you start now, and in 5 years, just say, I've been playing for 5 years. And I thought, that's really good. So I would recommend it. I would tell anybody, if you want to start some new endeavor, do it. In 5 years, you'll be saying, I've been doing it for 5 years.
And you guys are such great examples of this. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your time. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having us. We liked it so much. I think we're going to do it again in a couple of days.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
All right. What do you think? Ready to say yes? You ready to stay curious and ask questions? To put on happy face and to be the human element, to show face and really put your reputation and kindness first. I think there were so many fun moments in this, just hearing that you can do whatever you want to do as long as you just get started. I loved what Sid said towards the end that, well, if you start now in 5 years, you can say I've been doing it for 5 years. What a fun way for us to get ideas, to figure out that if it sounds good, it is good, like Duke Ellington said. It was so much fun to illuminate this story and to share this story with you. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I hope that whatever you're doing, you know that you matter. And I'll see you next time on the Illuminate Podcast.